This program is presented by Titleist Thursdays. Find the perfect equipment fit for your game. Sign up for a complimentary club fitting in your area at Titleist.com.
It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole. I'm your host, Michael Williams, as always, bringing you the best of golf, golf lifestyle, golf management, golf, as much as we can, as often as we can. Just to get the social media thing out of the way, I implore you to follow me on my Instagram account at Michael Williams TV on Instagram and Michael on TV on Twitter. And for Golf WRX, put an at sign in front of our website name and you'll have us everywhere. Leave off the .com, please, unless you're doing connecting to the website. Okay? Okay. We have a great, great show for you today. Two people who are, you know what? They are worthy of our admiration. They just are. The first guest is going to be a man who you probably have heard of now, especially if you are a subscriber to Golf Digest. He is a man who was imprisoned for almost three decades for a crime he did not commit. Through his acquisition of knowledge about the game of golf, he was set free. Golf actually set a man free from prison, or helped to, I should say. We've had Max Adler on recently from Golf Digest to talk about how that whole process went, but it was through this guest's connection to golf that he connected with Max, who connected him to people who eventually got him free. And it was just, it's just an amazing story. Of course, I'm talking about Valentino Dixon. And Valentino is joining us today. We had Max talking about him. Now we will be talking with the man himself. He also has a special that's coming up on December 11th. That's Tuesday, December 11th at 8 p.m. on the Golf Channel. The special will be premiering about his case, his life, his art, the phenomenon, really, that is Valentino Dixon. I am honored to have him on the show to talk to us about this, and I hope you will enjoy his thoughts and be as inspired by him as I am. Our second guest is, actually won't be a guest on the show. I wanted to share some audio because, of course, in the past week, we said goodbye to the 41st President of the United States, George Herbert Walker Bush, and he was revered by family, by his country, by the citizenry of this country, indeed worldwide, globally. A tear was shed for as much the passing of an era as it was the passing of the man. That sense of honor and dignity, a sense of service and pride and family. These are things that are found in far too short supply around us these days, but he exemplified these things. He personified these things. And Marvin Bush, one of his sons, who I'm sure you saw them if you watched any of the services that were held in Washington or in Texas, Marvin Bush, I'm proud to say, is a friend of mine. And he came in studio with me on my show a couple of years ago. This is prior to me coming to Golf WRX, but it's my audio, so I can do whatever I want with it. And I wanted to share that with you because although it's a couple of years ago, it still gives you a good idea about what the man is about, what the family is about, and really about their long and enduring connection to sports in general, golf in particular. It's a fun chat. I think you'll be surprised by just how fun of a guy Marvin Bush is. He really is something special, as are many in his family. And again, I just wanted to share that with you. He did promise that he would come in and join us after the holidays, and we definitely want to give his family time to grieve and time to come together after this most difficult loss. I know all too well what that feels like. So we will have him in to talk to us live about current events, but I wanted to share this with you for this week. So since he's on our mind, I just wanted to give throw another bit of memorabilia, if you will, at you to commemorate and honor George H.W. Bush. So we'll have Valentino Dixon, a very special man, and Marvin Bush from a very special family, also a special man in his own right. It's a good show today. I'm really excited about this, and I hope you are too. So go ahead and hit the pause button. Go grab yourself, you know, sort of two fingers of your favorite. And for me, that'll be like the Michter's single barrel. That's what I got. I'm going to cue that up. So you'll get something to come back and sit with us, and let's get the show on the road, shall we? Michael Williams, 19th hole, golf, WRX.
Hi, Michael. This is Barbara Nicholas. Just want to wish you a great congratulations on the one-year anniversary of the 19th hole. You've got a great voice. We love hearing what you have to say, and we wish you the best for many years.
Welcome back to Golf WRX's 19th Hole. Your host, Michael Williams. And, you know, I love what I do. I love my job. It's been very, very good to me. But there's some stories that just ascend over other stories. You know, it's not just about golf. Ultimately, this thing is about life and lives that really impact the people that they connect with. And, you know, sometimes that person can be a golfer. That's not impossible. But I find that, you know, with the other work that I do as a journalist, you find some more serious stories. And here's one where all of that came together. I think I've told you about it recently. We had Max Adler from Golf Digest talking about Valentino Dixon, a very, very special man who has a very unusual and almost frankly unbelievable story. And I was gravitated to it from the first time that I saw it. But I had an opportunity to meet the man himself, Valentino Dixon, and I'm happy to say that we've kind of become friends. So it gives me great, great pleasure to welcome for the first time to the 19th hole a very special person, an inspirational man, and somebody I hope you'll enjoy as much as I do, Valentino Dixon. Valentino, welcome to the 19th hole.
Well, thanks, Michael. I'm very grateful and appreciate you having me on your show.
And, you know, we were just saying before we came on, you know, that you were saying about me, but I tell you just, it's not only your story, it's just you as a person. You know, I just connected with you, you know, as a person from the first time that I met you as somebody who was honest and sincere and just undamaged by your story. We're going to go into your story for a minute, but just you as a person, you managed to be such an appealing person. And I know that has to carry you, like, as you go through your life now, your new life.
Well, it has. You know, I've always been a people person.
Yeah, so, I can tell, you know, that.
Yeah, I've always been a people person. I've always tried to help others. You know, I'm not perfect, you know, but I've always, you know, been the type of person that put everybody before myself. You know, even in the penitentiary, so many guys that I helped while I was there, and those guys were, you know, crying when I left. I mean, these are hardened criminals, you know, and it's crazy because I speak to about seven of them on the phone, and I just got through writing 11 letters. And just a few days ago, I sent two turkeys to the penitentiary for some of the guys to have for the holidays.
Wow. It's just amazing to me, you know, that the level of level of charity and forgiveness that you have in your heart. But let's take this story back to the beginning, or at least to the part where I found it, where you were in the penitentiary. You were in Attica. I mean, one of the hardest prisons in this country, if not in this world, essentially for a crime that you did not commit. And if you want to take up the story from there, like how if it's not too painful to talk about, even, you know, how did all that happen? How did you even get in there? What happened with that?
Well, I was out hanging with some friends, you know, and the shooting occurred between a friend of mine and some other guys. And these guys pulled up and they started shooting, and it must have been about 80 of us hanging out. You know, it was a restaurant setting, and you know,
and this is in Buffalo, New York, right?
In the Buffalo area. Buffalo, New York. Right. Yeah, I grew up in a bad area, drug infested area, you know, a lot of violence and stuff like that, you know, and these guys pull up, they start shooting, you know, they shoot a friend of mine's and another friend of mine's return fire, you know, and end up killing the guy. Anyway, long story short, when the shots rang out, I was inside the deli across the street, you know, and I actually ran out afterwards and ran to my car and pulled off. Shortly thereafter, I was pulled over and taken into custody and questioned and ultimately charged with shooting three people.
My God.
I knew that I was going to be cleared, or at least I felt I was going to be cleared because it was 80 witnesses. You know, so I said, there's no way to, you know, they're not going to straighten this out and I'll be out the next day. But that didn't happen. 2 days after I was arrested, this friend of mine turned himself in to police, told them what happened. Actually, the physical evidence matched his story. They found the dead guy's gun on the scene, and they disregarded him, told him that they didn't believe him. 7 witnesses came forward. They disregarded those witnesses. I found myself going to trial 10 months later. My lawyer promised the jury that he was going to call these witnesses and introduce this confession and did not do it. Mm. You know, and this is all on public record, you know, and I had a public defender and the jury found me guilty. You know, I didn't know that later on, the jury foreman went to the judge and asked the judge, hey, you know, why his lawyer didn't call the witnesses he promised us? The judge told him not to worry about it, to go home and sleep well, and the judge never revealed that this happened. You know, it was our local paper that went to the foreman and said, hey, what happened during the deliberations? He said, hey, I went to the judge and told him I didn't feel right about this, that something was wrong here. And anyway, the judge denies that that even took place. You know, I was given 39 years.
Good Lord.
And 39 years, I always had hope that I was going to be released, because with all the evidence that I had, you know, there's no way that you can keep me in prison. You know, in fact, you know, in total, 10 witnesses came forward. You know, 7 of those witnesses were on the DA's witness list, was never called by the DA, and they was not called by my attorney, you know. And I just think that sometimes, you know, these things happen when they come to minorities or just not having enough money to pay for good legal representation.
Right. So you went to jail for a crime you didn't commit. You failed by the system, by your attorney, by so many people at this point. How long were you in prison for a crime you did not commit?
27 years.
27 years.
Yeah, 27 years, 13 days. Yeah, like 27 years and 13 days.
And you were a young man when you, I mean, you're still
a
young
21.
Man. 21
years old. Yep.
Almost a kid.
Walked out of there at 48.
It's just amazing to me. And so the story, the tragic part of the story is this that we've just heard. And one of the heroic parts starts now when someone came to you and approached you about painting a golf course while you were in there because they knew that you were a talented artist. Tell me about that.
Right. Well, I was known as the artist in Attica. I spent, out of the 27 years, I spent 25 of those years in Attica. So over the years, I had publicity on my case because the local newspaper had came to believe in my innocence. But there wasn't a judge in Buffalo that would do anything about it. And so the warden and the officers in Attica knew that I was innocent of the crime and would always check in on me, you know, and look in and see if I was all right and everything like that. But they knew that I drew also, you know. So the warden came to me one day and asked me, could I draw his favorite hole, which was Augusta, 12th hole at Augusta. And I never golfed before. I mean, I'm from the inner city, you know. So it was like, all right, I guess I can do it, you know. Knew nothing about golf. I drew Augusta 12th hole. He loved it. Other inmates loved it. And one of the inmates encouraged me to draw more golf holes. I said, what are you talking about? What for? It doesn't make sense. He says, I love the golf course. I think you should draw more. You know, he planted the seed. A week later, I went around and I got some old golf magazines, Golf Digest magazines, and I started pulling out the pictures that I love. The guy gave me some really old ones that he had in his cell. Mm-hmm. So I started pulling out the ones that I liked, the ones that I thought was pretty, and from there I started drawing them. You know, whenever I put my mind into something, I just go in really hard. So for months and months, all I did was draw golf courses. Okay, eventually I started reading the columns out of the Golf Digest magazine, and I came across Max Adler's Golf Saved My Life, you know, and I kind of put the two together, and, you know, and because it was like golf was saving my life, because, you know, being there was really, really stressful and hard, and every day was a challenge. You know, I have friends that committed suicide. You know, I didn't know if I was going to be the next person, if my mind was going to snap.
And let me just interject there, and I'm going to ask my listeners, if you have not heard of Attica State Prison, go Google it. Go Google Attica State Prison, because we're not talking about one of these plush resorts here. We're not talking about minimum security. We're talking about one of the hardest prisons that's ever been. This is a place where you do not want to be. I'll just put it like that. But if you haven't heard of Attica, go look up the history of that. And you go ahead, Valentino. I just wanted to let people know exactly the place that we're talking about.
Actually, Attica is known for the 1971 riots.
Exactly.
Okay, because of the many people that died there. But let me tell you something, Michael. When I got there, the atmosphere was still the same. You know, even though it was generations later, the officer's attitude was still the same. The treatment is horrible. You know, the conditions are inhumane. It's just violence every day, all the time. You know, and so I walked into that situation. I mean, a guy tried to cut me in the face within months of me being there for no reason. I hadn't done anything. Mm. You know, it's just the way it is there.
Right.
So I had to really be clever and smart in order to survive. I had to learn the whole prison code and everything else. You know, I just kept to myself, you know, and God protected me and seen me through. I don't know how I made it out of there, but I did. Hmm.
And this art, now this golf art, is something now that becomes a part of your armor and your shield that's protecting you as you walk through this place.
Let me say this. Right. There was so many, like I said, there's so many guys, I mean, guys that and killed 3-4 people, you know, were stopping at the cells saying, wow, I love that golf course. These are guys that never golfed before. Mm. So I'm saying, if these guys love the golf courses that I'm drawing, you know, I can only imagine what how golfers would feel, you know, because I mean, these guys, you know, never golfed. Maybe 1 out of 10 have golfed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it really gave me the boost. You know, the determination it gave me and inspired me to keep pushing. I felt like, wow, you know, this is something that you really like doing now, because I got satisfaction out of other people looking at my drawings and loving them, you know, and this is what motivates me.
We're talking to the great Valentino Dixon. Now, can I say artist, professional artist, Valentino Dixon, here on the 19th hole, Michael Williams, your host. And I interrupted you. I'm sorry, Valentino, when you were just talking about how you connected. You saw Max Adler's column, Golf Saved My Life, which is about a variety of people who felt that golf had interjected and interceded in their lives when they were at a low point, and it helped them to get over, to get past, and to get through. And you reached out and contacted Max with your story, correct?
Yeah, yes, I did. I sent him a drawing, I think one or two drawings, in the mail with a letter. You know, like a 4 or 5 page letter explaining my situation. And I just took a shot, you know, and he immediately wrote back and said that he wanted to interview me, you know, and I think that's what changed everything. I mean, it changed my life instantly. I mean, my family was so elated and happy. I mean, you have a golf magazine that wants to interview me in the penitentiary. They've never been inside the penitentiary, I don't believe, you know, so, It was new. It was exciting. And in my world, it was like I was a candy in a cookie jar.
Can I say hope? Maybe hope is the right word.
It gave me the hope. Yep, gave me the hope. You know, it definitely gave me the hope that I needed at that moment.
Yes.
You know, I didn't know how far it was going to go, but it gave me a fighting chance to hang in the ring for another day.
And once Max heard your story, he wasn't just focused on the fact that here's this person who's doing these interesting golf drawings, and they're beautiful, the paintings and the art drawings. We'll talk about that later. They're stunning in the way you do. I really They're unique. I really have never seen an artist approach the golf course as a subject the way you do it. And we'll talk about your art in a minute. But okay. Golf didn't, or Max Adler didn't just focus on the golf drawing. He focused on the injustice that was being done to you. And that led to a series of events that leads to us talking here today. So talk to me about that.
Well, let me just say this. You know, when I tell you, Michael, that 10 people cleared me this crime, I had this written statements to support what I'm stating. Okay. The guy that committed this crime, I had a videotape of his confession. I had this videotape for 20 something years and nobody would look at this.
Nobody would look at it? You couldn't get anybody to look at it.
No courts would even entertain it. Nobody wants to be bothered. Nobody wanted to get involved with this case. You know, it was a case full of corruption. You know, the police were hiding evidence and threatening witnesses, trying to get witnesses to not, you know, get involved. And it was just a lot of messiness here. Nobody wants to be a part of that. Even the judge involved in the case had been arrested at one time. He still remained on the bench all the way up until last year when he retired. You know, so it was a lot of dirty politics going on, and Nobody wanted to, you know, but Max, you know, Max, I sent him the paperwork. I said, here, Max, if you read it, you'll see it's a paper trail here. It's their police reports that cleared me. It's their evidence that cleared me. It's not coming from me. You know, this is their evidence that cleared me, you know, because, you know, when you get arrested for something, for anything, you don't have no credibility. Once you get arrested, people assume, hey, you're guilty. Like, you know, what are you talking about, guy? We trust the system. We're not going to trust you. You know, so my thing would always be is, listen, I know I don't have no credibility. I'm in adequate prison, you know, so I need you to look at the paperwork. Just read these statements, and then you will see that I had nothing to do with this crime.
And so Max took this to, or how did it go from there to the people at Georgetown University who were so instrumental in gaining your freedom?
Well, what happened was this. Okay, once Max's article came out, there was a well-known lawyer in New York City that I sent a letter to say, hey, I was in the Golf Digest, could you check this out? He actually said, oh, wow, that's interesting. I want to take your case. He took my case pro bono, okay? But he sat on my case. He didn't do anything with it once he took it. All right. And there was a paralegal in his office named Marty Tankcliffe, who was also an exoneree after 17 years of being wrongfully convicted. So Marty knew about my case, even though he couldn't do anything. Okay.
Right.
About 6 months after the Golf Channel came out, the Golf Digest magazine was published. NBC Dateline came. And the Today Show. But the lawyer that I had say, hey, I want to hold off. I don't want to do anything like that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So now I'm like, hold on a minute. What's going on here? So some time passed. And next thing you know, the Golf Channel came. When the Golf Channel came, I said, you know what? I'm going to do this interview without the lawyer. You know, I took a chance. Did the interview. The interview was nominated for an Emmy Award. And It helped my cause, but it didn't get me out of jail. Okay. But it gave me more evidence to use, because the DA was asked, with all of this evidence, you sure you got the right man? And he finally admitted that he's only human. He could have made a mistake.
Wow.
But yet.
How long ago was this?
Guess what? That was in 2013. Just imagine that.
Right.
2013, he says that, and I still remained in prison another 5 years. Okay. Right. So last year, Marty Tankcliffe calls my mom up and he says, hey, you know, I was once a paralegal in this office, and I would like to help Valentino and the students is going to, you know, they have chosen his case to work on. And by then, you know, I had already prepared my own legal papers because I was working on my case every single day. And I said, well, here, I'm going to make it easier for you guys. I have everything situated and ready for you, and I've done most of all the work. All you guys got to do is go in there and put your stamp on it, basically, and file the papers. Because I have found many of the issues of violation in regards to the law. But anyway, not to take away from what they did, you know, they came on, and they actually interviewed the DA, who admitted that he didn't turn over the results from my fingers being tested to see if I fired a gun, and my clothes and my car.
It's unbelievable that the amount.
Yeah, he didn't turn it over. Yeah, and this guy still practices law. I mean, it's madness. But this is our system. This is what people have to deal with. And I guess if you've never been arrested before, you don't have a family member in the penitentiary, then, you know, you don't have no real reason to be invested in this type of thing.
And all the while, all this is going on, you're still pursuing your art as well. I mean, somehow.
Well, the thing is this. I was on, you know, God was always with me. I prayed a lot, prayed every day, okay? And I just stayed positive. I read hundreds and hundreds of self-help books, motivational books, anything to fill my mind with positive things and energy so that I wouldn't become negative or fall into that whole negative thing that you see. And I've seen a lot of prisoners fall into where they lose hope, they become bitter, angry, upset with the world and all that other stuff. I was determined not to allow that to happen to me. So I had to push my willpower to the max. At the same time, I was drawing up to 10 hours a day. So I was really like, listen, if I got to become the best artist in the world in order to get my freedom, then that's what I'll do. And this is why I pushed myself to the limit. You know, I've done some golf drawings these are all drawings now, not paintings. I've done some drawings that people have never even seen. I got a 60 by 90 drawing.
A 60 by 90, really?
I got a 60 by 90 drawing of Augusta.
Wow. That's
in fact, when I get off this phone, I'm going to text it to you.
You gotta be careful, man. I may have that one printed out and put up on a wall.
Yeah, I got a 60 by 90 drawing of Augusta. I had to do it on four boards. Because the biggest boards that I can get is 20 by 30.
That's amazing.
So, right. So what I did was I put it on 9 boards and made a puzzle out of it.
It's just stunning to me.
And I did that in the 6 by 8 prison cell with a little small drawing board and some color pencils.
Valentino, we fast forward. The Marty was one who connected with some folks at Georgetown who ultimately did the work that got you released, and you were released in, was it September or October of this year?
September 19th.
September 19th. I guess that's a day you won't forget.
Yeah.
When you first got out, it's crazy to ask, but what were your thoughts? What was that feeling when you first stepped out of those gates as a free man?
Well, I just wanted to get some real lobster. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm telling you, all I did was store information in my brain. All the commercials, all the restaurants. I said, I'm going to Red Lobster first.
You're okay, a practical man.
I want the lobster fest.
Did you get the lobster tail, the lobster scampi?
I got the tail, I got the scampi, I got the crab leg, I got all that stuff. I sat there literally for about an hour and a half and just ate till I could barely walk.
Oh man! And so I know that you loved. I had the opportunity to meet some of your family when we first met.
Right.
You know, the family was
my daughter. Yep.
A daughter, just a beautiful reunion.
Yeah.
For you,
I'm so proud of her.
And, go ahead.
You know, I just left them down. I just left them down. Just seeing her. I just got back from Ohio last night. Because I went down there because my grandkids got baptized yesterday.
Oh, wow, that's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I rode down there. And that was my first time ever going to Columbus, Ohio. But I rode down there to see my grandkids get baptized.
Beautiful. And now you have been, so for all the time you were drawing, you had never been to a golf course. And you made
never.
All this beautiful art.
Right.
But now you've had a chance to go to a golf course. Can you share that experience when you first set foot on a golf course?
They sent for me to go to Pebble Beach.
Unbelievable. As your first golf course, Pebble Beach. You started off
Pebble
at the
Beach,
top.
And I had drawn Pebble Beach. I did three Pebble Beaches while I was in Attica.
Wow.
Never set foot on Pebble Beach, of course. And here I am. They have a legendary fence.
Yes.
You know. And I sat on that same fence, this fence that I've drawn in several pictures. I sat on that fence and did some sketches.
Just beautiful.
Ain't that something? You can't make this stuff up, Michael.
Nobody would believe it. If you wrote this story and took it to somebody, they wouldn't buy it. They say, bring me something I can believe.
Most people didn't believe I was drawing those drawings in the cell. You know what I'm saying? Even the guards would walk up and stare and talk with me for countless hours. The guards. And they would be like, Dixon, because they call me Dixon by my last name. They say, Dixon, man, if we didn't see this ourselves, we wouldn't believe you could draw this stuff. There's no way we'll believe that you draw all these golf courses.
And go ahead.
What you about to say?
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
Yeah, because before I had left here, I had amassed hundreds of golf drawings.
Your style is like a surrealistic type of style. Like I said, there's a very, most of the art that you see about golf courses is very old fashioned, and people mostly right. try to make it look almost like a photograph and do it. But
right.
you're almost like, if I can draw, you're like an impressionist. You know, you like a Van Gogh or you know, one of the great impressionists, because it's almost like a surreal feeling. It's like, it's not how a golf course looks. It's how a golf course feels when I look at your paintings. What do you have a particular style, or is there someone who influenced you?
It's funny. You're the second person this week that said that.
Which part?
The Van Gogh part.
Yeah, it's true.
Right. Right. Unbelievable.
Is there an artist who you looked at as a style guide or something like that, or somebody who's an influencer for you?
No, because I had to develop my own style, and you know, over a course of I would say 20 years. You know, just every day I had to learn from error. I didn't have no teacher, so I had to learn through trial and error what to do, what not to do, how to blend colors, what worked, what didn't work, how to layer everything on top of each other. My goal has always been to make the drawings look like a painting.
Make the drawings look like a painting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, make the drawings look like a painting. Take the whole paper out of it. So when you look at it, you say, that ain't done on no paper. You know, that's the whole goal there. So I have to put so many colors on top of each other to get that painting effect. You know, and then drawing is so much more strenuous than painting, because I know how to paint also. But drawing is so much more strenuous because it's no shortcuts. You know, you got to sit there for, I might sit there for 2 hours and just do one little corner, because you got to get all the detail in there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's way more work that goes into what I do in regards if I was painting. You know, I mean, if I'd have had done this stuff in painting, I would have thousands of golf paintings.
Yeah. And that's on the way. I know that's coming. What's also coming is a Golf Channel special, and that's coming up on Tuesday. This is going to be Tuesday. That's December 11th at 8 p.m. Eastern. There's going to be a premiere of a special about you.
Mm-hmm. And then NBC and December 22nd is also going to do an air of my story.
And this is going to be about your whole life, your art, before you went in, your time during, and then your life after.
Yes.
It's just, you know, as you, the thing that fascinated me about you, Valentino, is how you could have this experience and come through it without a sense of bitterness, without a sense of remorse, revenge, any of those things. All of your efforts are turned into creation and into forgiveness and to helping the people who are still inside. Well, how do you do that?
Let me say this.
What's with you, man?
I'm a very grateful person. You know, we should never be, and I don't want to sound too religious or anything like that, but we should always be grateful to the Creator for what the things that He's given us. You know, so I mean, I was in a bad situation. I'm sitting in a cell, you know, and I'm looking at the people around me, and the people around me is doing 10 times worse than me, you know, and I had to be grateful. So, you know, that's how I look at it. I'm turning on this. We had these little 8-inch TVs that we could buy on commissary for like $149. Okay. So, right. Yeah. They would beat us on every level that they could.
Wow.
So I'm watching this TV when I can, and I'm looking at the world. I'm looking at what's going on with people out in society. You know, and I hate to say it, I was in the worst prison, and I'm in a 6x8 cell, and I felt like I was more blessed than a lot of people on the outside, because people are really struggling out there and doing really bad. You know, here it is, you know, God preserved me. You know, he don't have, you know, he kept me in shape. He kept my mind sane. He gave me this talent. He gave me a loving family. So, you know, I had to count all those blessings and say, you know what? I could really be twisted up in here and messed up. So, you know what? Don't be bitter. Don't be angry. Don't complain. Don't cry. Count your blessings. You know, push your willpower to the highest level. Just push, and be the best artist that you can be in the world. You know, and that's what that was my goal.
And Valentino, you have a website where people can go and take a look at your art, and I believe purchase art if they would like to. What's the name of your website?
It's ValentinoDixon.com.
Okay, couldn't be easier. So you can go to ValentinoDixon.com, and prints of your artwork are for sale on that website, right?
Yep. Yes, they are, and non golf, because you got to remember, for many years,
right,
I drew a lot of stuff, faces, you know, famous people. I've done animals, landscapes, flowers, anything that you could think of, I've done before I did the golf art.
And again, I'm going to say your artwork is stunning. It is beautiful.
Thanks, Michael.
I mean, just not even for a Christmas gift, for any type of gift, or anybody who wants to put something not only of beauty, but of meaning and of value, because not only of the image that's there, but the person that created it. I can recommend to anybody, this is the thing that you want to do, is to participate in this. So again, I want to remind everybody that Golf Channel Special is on Tuesday, December 11th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And it's on again on network television, right? Later on in December,
yes,
correct?
Yes, network television, NBC, on December 22nd.
December 22nd. You have another opportunity to see that to an even broader audience. Before I let you go, I said to ask you, have you had a chance to pick up a golf club and play any golf yet?
I did. I played some golf in Mexico.
Yes, sir. And how was it? How did you do? Scores, of course, don't matter. That's not the point of this one. But how did you like playing?
I loved it. I you know, we went and played, and actually we got video footage of it, because the Golf Digest magazine tape recorded it, you know, filmed some of it, and they put it online a couple of days ago.
So,
you know,
we can go to Golf Digest and see some of that video. Yeah.
Right. And then I came out in stance today on in the Golf Digest magazine, a 6-page article.
Beautiful. And that's you hitting your first shots.
First shots. I hit it on the hole called the Tail of the Whale.
The course. I played there a couple of years ago. I actually won an amateur golf tournament down there. I'll send you a picture of my trophy.
Well, we went to, beautiful. Well, we went to, and you're going to laugh at my score, but we went to the Tail of the Whale. The tide was crazy.
Yep.
Okay. And I couldn't hit the ball, 180 yards or whatever, to get to, you know. So what I did was, it took me 21 shots to get to the hole. Okay. But check this out. The tide, I had a brand new pair of sneakers on.
Yeah.
The tide came and almost pushed me into the water, because the tide was getting high. Yeah. And Max was like, come on, this is it. We got to go. I said, no, Max, I'm getting that ball in that hole. Okay. And I hit it. And I must have hit it off the rocks about 6-7 times, trying to get it out of the dirt and the water and everything, that ball.
I know exactly the hole you're talking about.
Right. And but I never lost my ball the whole time. And I got it up over there. That's right.
I love it. That's a man of...
So what would that be about? That's probably about 18 bogeys.
No, you know what it is, man? That is a double eagle, my friend. That is a double eagle. Okay. That is for you. That's what I'm talking about. You know? There is no score. We don't keep score on that one. That's all about you. That's all about the person. The number one. That's you. You're the ace on that hole. I mean that.
Thanks, Michael. I really appreciate that.
Valentina, you know, I know you got a lot of things to do, and you devote so much of your time to other people. I don't want to keep you on for too long, but I do hope that you will come on and join us again to give us insights about golf, talk about your art, whatever you want to talk about. But you got an open invitation. You hit me up, you get on.
Anytime you want me, I'm coming.
Beautiful. Again, thank you so much for spending this time. Thank you so much for being who you are. I mean that in the bottom of my heart, man. You are an inspiration to me. And just seriously, on so many levels, thank you.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Michael. And talk to you soon.
You got it. That is okay. That is a man. That's a man. Valentino Dixon right there. You know, I look at what he's done and what he's endured and what he's made out of it. There's an old saying that says that pressure both burst pipes and makes diamonds. And that is a man who under pressure turned into a gem. Okay. And it makes me wonder if I'm even the same species as him. But I'm proud to know him. I'm proud to know him. And I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more golf, because that's, you know, that's fun to talk about too. Michael Williams, 19th Hole Golf, WRX. Michael Williams here for Louis 57 Golf Travel. Look, if you're within the sound of my voice and you're planning a trip for yourself or anyone you care about, stop it right now. Put down what you're doing and go to Louis57Travel.com. These guys have the most amazing packages and the most amazing professionals to make it work for you so that you don't need a vacation after your vacation. Check out the things they're doing for the Ryder Cup, they're doing for the other major championships, or for any destination you can imagine, okay? These are the guys who will make it work and make it work well. Once you try them, you won't go back to trying to do it yourself. Don't take my word for it. Go to Louis57Travel.com and see what they have for you. That's Louis57Travel.com, the major champion of golf travel. Welcome back to Golf WRX's 19th Hole. I'm your host, Michael Williams. And this past week, we were grieving and also honoring the memory of the late George H.W. Bush, the 41st President of the United States. He was a great statesman, a great citizen, a great family man, a great person altogether. He was not perfect, but he was a man in full, as I always say. And he was worthy of our honor and respect this past week. The Bush family is extensive, and we saw them on television, how close that family is and how well some of us know many of them, since they've chosen to live their lives in public service. Marvin Bush is one of the brothers who lives in Washington, D.C. I have had the pleasure to know him and have him on my shows previously. So today, I, out of respect, I don't have him on the show live today. I've been in contact with him and with the family, relaying my condolences. And I told him that we'd love to have him on, and we agreed that we'd be best to have him on live on the show to talk after the holidays, to give his family time to mend and heal, and all of those things that families do when they lose a loved one. But I do have some audio from a time when Marvin was on the show not so long ago, and I think you'll be able to easily identify the time frame when that was. It's obviously when his father was still alive, and it's interesting to hear how lovingly he talks about his family, his father, his brothers, and the entire clan, and also about their amazing connection to golf and golf history. So right now I'm going to play you a clip that I did one time when Marvin had been a guest on my show, and listen to it. I hope you enjoy it, and this will hold you over until we get him back in studio live. So let's talk a little bit about you. Enough about us.
Okay.
Let's talk about you.
Okay. Hey, it's fine. It's one of my favorite topics.
So again, growing up, you know, in a family that has so many accomplished people, so many politicians.
Yes.
Again, the son of H.W.,
Son of, we call him affectionately 41.
41. Do you actually call him 41?
Or I call him sir and dad.
Right.
And that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's shorthand, basically.
There you go. And how old is he now? He just celebrated a birthday.
He celebrated his 91st birthday. And gratefully, he stayed on planet Earth for this one. Last year, he jumped out of an airplane.
No more jumping out of airplanes for now.
No more. But this year, my mom celebrated her 90th birthday. And we all suggested that, you know, maybe this would be the time to do it. But she chickened out.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Okay. Good for her. But you have so many people in the political realm in the family.
We do.
Generations and generations. And one of the things that's sort of bounded together in your very close family, which I admire.
Because, thank you.
You know, do a lot of things together.
Yep.
And one of those things is golf. Did you grow up with game playing?
Sports overall. We grew up playing sports. When I was a kid, I didn't play quite as much golf as a kid. I came to the sport later in life, as did my siblings. But when we were younger, you know, I have three older brothers. There was a natural 2-on-2 basketball game going on. We played football,
yeah,
baseball. We were sort of the traditional three-sport guys. But later in life, we've come to love the sport of golf. I wish we had played as kids because we're all, you know, kind of in the 8 to 15 range right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's been plenty of dilution over the last couple of generations because my grandfather was an accomplished golfer. He was a scratch golfer.
Hmm.
He was the president of the USGA at one point. My dad, there was a little dilution.
Right, we had the Walker Cup again.
Well, that was my dad's grandfather. So right. So that's another generation. He was the guy, George Herbert Walker, G.H.
Right.
Was the guy who founded the Walker's Cup. He was a guy in St. Louis, a self-made guy, and he just loved the game of golf and thought best thing that we could have would be competition between Europe and the U.S. And so they started that, and my grandfather continued the tradition, and my dad was let's just say this. I'm going to be gracious here. I love the man. He was a good ball striker and a very fast golfer.
No, he plays at a rapid rate.
He is ready, fire, aim, you know. I mean, and you look up, if you're in his foursome and you're sort of lollygagging around and trying to get a yardage or something, all you're going to do is see wheels ahead of you because he's flying.
He's wheels up.
Oh, yeah. He played with up in Maine with Phil Mickelson and Faxon and my brother George in a little course they play up in Maine. He played in 2.5 hours.
18 holes.
Yeah.
18 holes. That's real honestly.
Now, those guys are pretty good.
That's a blessing. I know I want to speed up play. We talk about speeding up play, but 2.5 hours, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah. So he's the biggest supporter of the While We're Young campaign.
And while we're young?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I get it. Young at heart. Look over that.
No, I'm talking about hit the ball while
exactly.
We're still young.
Just get giddy up. You know, yeah. I'm totally for that. We're talking to Marvin Bush, who is a member of the board of the First Tee of Greater Washington. And how long have you been a member of the board there?
3 years now.
Yeah.
And I'm thrilled to be a part of it. I wish I could be even more active. I've had the opportunity to get out to Haynes Point on a number of occasions to see the actual programming taking place. But all you got to do is spend, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes out there with these kids to see what an impact it's had on their lives. And it's not about the golf, as you know, Michael, you're on the board as well. It's more about what it's doing for these kids, building confidence off the course. And it's frankly, because of the leadership of people like Clint Sanchez and Michael, who are, you know,
yeah, Mike Pius, those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Who just do a great job with the kids and
yep.
encourage them in such a wonderful way.
Yeah. It's really a stellar program that you had the opportunity to learn family values and
yes,
honesty, integrity in
absolutely.
The context of a family situation.
Yeah.
And this sort of replicates that kind of thing for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of kids all over the country. So it's a wonderful thing to have access to and to be a part of.
It sure is.
Let's talk a little bit about brother who's running for president.
Hopefully, we'd call him 45 one day.
I would say, because he gets to be POTUS, I was just thinking, you would be what, BROTUS?
Bro, yeah, BROSA.
You'd be BROTUS?
Yeah, BROTUS, I like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with that phrase.
That's a new hashtag. Hashtag BROTUS.
Michael. Yeah, I would be. Listen, I when you have somebody in your family who you love going through this process, you have mixed emotions.
Yeah. It's a tough process.
Part of you says, you know, hey, why would you go through this? Why would you put your family through this? And then the other part of you, we've got this sort of competitive ethos in our family, sort of says, okay, I'm going to get out there and do whatever I can to help you. I love you. I think you're a great guy. He did a really great job as governor of Florida. And, you know, so we're all in.
I think it's just fascinating to see that many members of a family rise to a certain level. And we have those families here in America, you know, sure. A certain one, your family is certainly among them. Do you ever get to the point where that competition sort of spills over into, you know, and you get a little, side with each other or that sort of thing?
No, because I mean, frankly, if you look at our family, there are five kids,
right.
And only two of them are crazy enough to have run for public office.
Okay. So right.
Yeah, they're in the minority.
Right. So they're
just
nuts.
Looking at that way.
You guys are quite okay. You sort of keep them balanced, right?
We do. Yeah.
So who's the best golfer?
Right now, my brother George is.
Okay.
And it's amazing. He did not play golf for a number of years in his administration after we had men and women serving overseas. He just didn't think it was appropriate to be seen on the golf course. But I can tell you this, he's made up for lost time. Now that he's got a heck of a lot less pressure in his life. And he's got a very nice swing. So his index is about 8 right now.
An eight,
a legitimate 8.
How often is he playing?
He's playing 3 times a week.
Okay, so there you go.
He's down in Dallas. The weather's good. He's got a smooth swing, and his Achilles heel, like so many of us who you know aren't able to play a couple times a week, is a short game.
Right.
So he's been working on that. And you know, being the ex-president has its benefits, right?
You tell me about some of those.
Well, one of them is that he had the chance to play in Dallas with Jordan Spieth about 3 weeks ago.
That's a perk.
And he's playing with, you know, every pro wants to work with him. And so he's having a great time.
He's coming.
Different guy now.
Of the female side in the family, are there any golfers? And
my sister, we only have one sister, and so she would be the best.
And where she
and the worst. She plays wherever she can, but she's fun to play with, and she's not quite as competitive as her four sort of meat eating older brothers who would do whatever it takes to win a match against each other.
Yeah,
I mean the problem with having three brothers, Michael, nobody gives anybody any putts once you get past about the 10th hole.
Oh, that's competitive thing. It's like
it's brutal.
Like 1.5 feet, you're putting it right.
Well, the first hole, you might seed a putt, get people thinking, maybe this is going to be a different type of match, and then you get once we get to crunch time, things change.
Yeah, I was playing.
My brother Jeb, by the way, is
same thing.
Really?
Yeah,
terrible.
Yeah, same thing. So how is Jeb as a player?
He's a good player. He's a grinder. He hits the ball right-handed. He was a very good tennis. He played tennis at the University of Texas, so he's a good athlete. Got great hand eye, and he's a real grinder. And so he's somebody who, and I'm not sure what this says about him as a potential president, but he won't give you a putt.
Uh-huh.
He will not give you a putt.
Okay, and so tough negotiator.
Tough negotiator, and he will get up and down when you count him out. And actually, George and I usually play my brother Neil and Jeb, so I'm
So thinking. those are the teams there that
oh,
you
yeah.
usually have set.
Yeah.
And is there a lot of banter on a course, you guys? Do you guys do a lot of smack talk?
It's polite, sort of. It can get a little ugly.
A little salty?
A little salty every once in a while.
Okay.
No, we have a great time. I mean, it's like my dream foursome is just playing with my brothers. And or if my dad still played, unfortunately, he's got Parkinson's, so he can't play golf anymore. But he will come around in a golf cart if we're up in Maine visiting my parents. He'll come in a golf cart and just sort of monitor the match to make sure everybody's okay and we're having fun.
I mean, that's an awesome visual to have you guys out there.
It's great.
All playing together, getting along, doing your thing, and to have so many other responsibilities that you have. But it's a lesson. It's a message about the game of golf and what
sure.
it can do in somebody's life. That even in literally the busiest life you can possibly imagine, there's a benefit to playing that
game. It's a little bit of a safe haven for 4 hours or 3.5, 4 hours. And, where you can get away from all that other stuff and the noise and be with people where you can just sort of decompress and have fun and compete.
Well, thanks so much for coming in and sharing and giving us a window into your family life. Really, that's something special. Well, really appreciate that.
And thank you for all you do for First Tee.
It's my pleasure.
Contributor.
Likewise, I'm sure, and we'll definitely have to get out and play. Because I bet.
Oh boy, you don't want to see that.
I really do.
Okay, I'll get out with you.
Honestly, I do.
I'll bring my wallet.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and we can just play for sodas, okay?
Okay, I'll bring some coins.
We can do that.
All right.
Beautiful thing.
Thank
Marvin
you,
Bush, thanks so much for
appreciate
joining us
it.
In studio.
As I say, I think it's just a pleasure to listen to how close the family is, the brothers, their connection to their father and mother, and the sense of history and duty and honor that sort of runs through the entire lineage. And they do all that while still having fun. You know, it's nice to see a guy like that who's in that position be able to smile and laugh and make jokes. He's just, you know, a really fun guy to hang around. I look forward to having him in after the holidays again. He guaranteed us that he would come in and he'll be able to talk some about his memories of his father in this difficult period, but also about his connection to golf and what he's doing now. And again, I just think you'll enjoy it. He's a really nice guy, and that's what you can say about all of the Bush family. They're very good people, nice people, hail fellow, well met, that sort of thing. I think you'll enjoy it. So we look forward to having him in. We'll be back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th Hole, Golf, WRX. Don't forget to listen to the other great podcasts on Golf WRX. Two Guys Talking with Andrew Tursky and Brian Knudsen is just what it says. Two guys talking about everything golf. They love golf, and so will you when you listen to Two Guys Talking. And the Gear Dive is the podcast home for the legitimate gear junkie. Johnny Wonder will have guests covering all things equipment from techs, tour reps, and players. It's a golf equipment rabbit hole. Find all of our podcasts on golfwrx.com, Apple iTunes, and SoundCloud. If you're looking for golf, you'll find it at Golf WRX. I can tell you I'm pretty satisfied with that show. I hope you are too. I mean, wow. Thank you to Valentino Dixon for sharing his thoughts, his story, his history, but sharing his spirit most of all. I mean, I hope that the spirit of that guy comes through the speakers at you the way it comes through at me. You know, just listening to that guy and understanding and getting a feeling for the kind of just forgiveness, the type of strength that he has, the type of strength of character. It's really a cut above. And I just so appreciate that he would spend some time coming to join us here on the 19th hole. And don't you miss his special. Again, premieres December 11th, Tuesday, December 11th, 8 p.m. Eastern. You don't want to miss that. And I believe there's another showing on December 22nd on the Golf Channel. You won't want to miss that. At any point, you get a chance to watch that special. Do yourself a favor and sit your whole family down and take a look at that, because there's a lesson to be learned and something to be gained for all of us from being exposed to that man's story. And of course, thank you to Marvin Bush for sitting down when he did, in advance for sitting down when he's going to with us. And again, I hope you enjoyed listening to a member of one of the iconic families in the United States, in the history of the United States, and in our current politics and daily life. You know, that this past week showed us just how relevant that name still is and will continue to be. And again, I thank Marvin, and I really send out my condolences and prayers for strength to that family. We really look forward to having you get past that period and having you in on the show, Marvin. So we'll see you soon. As I always say, please hit us up on our social media. You can hit me on at Michael Williams TV on Instagram. Now do this, okay? Don't just say you will. Don't just listen to these words. Go out and do it, okay? And also hit me up on Twitter. That's at Michael on TV, at Golf WRX. Gets you to us everywhere in terms of social media platforms, all right? So until next week, thank you so much for listening. We do this because we assume some of you are listening, and we are most grateful that you do. So wherever you are, grab your clubs, go out, play some golf. And when you do, hit them straight. Michael Williams, 19th Hole, Golf, WRX.